Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Auto Central Week powered by Auto Trader, South Africa's number one motoring marketplace. And once again, I'm your host, George Meany, and I have the very regular Wandile Sishi with me. How's it, Wandi?
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, good.
Another week, so I'm excited to see what we can get up to.
Lovely. And then we have a special guest with us, and none other than Gary Scott from Kia. Yeah. Gary hails all the way from Kia. Gary's driving a very special car today, but I don't think we can tell you what it is because we can't even see what it is, right?
I think we could talk about it, but okay. I can't show you. Thank you, George. Thank you, Wandi, for having me.
You're most welcome. So just a reminder to everybody that this podcast goes out live. I mean, it is pre-recorded, but we play it out live on a Monday morning, 9 a.m. And you can find it where, Wandi?
So you can find us on cliffcentral.com. That's the first place if you want to listen live. But we're also on YouTube, and we are streaming as well on different podcast platforms like Spotify, iTunes Music, depending on what you like. It's up to you.
Up to you.
Yeah.
Catch us anywhere.
Yeah.
Go to the YouTube channel, AutoTraderSA, at AutoTraderSA. So in recent weeks, we've had the opportunity to sit with many OEMs in South Africa to understand how they're navigating the ever-changing future. And Gary Scott, CEO of Kia Motors South Africa, we're very privileged to have him here. And we're going to go through a few kind of challenging times with Gary in the recent past, and but first of all, Gary, I think welcome to the Auto Central show. Before we kick off, we've got some quick fire questions for you, and
let's do it.
We thought we would put you on the spot.
Oh, great!
so quick fire questions. Whatever comes to mind first, and this will get everybody to kind of get to know Gary a little bit better, and
maybe Gary will get to know Gary.
Maybe Gary's kids will get to know Gary's preferences a little bit better. So what do you prefer, winter or summer?
Summer.
Summer. Ah, okay. Burger or steak?
Burger.
Burger. Okay. Oh. In terms of vacation, bush or beach?
Oh, beach.
Beach.
Yeah.
Ice or EV?
Ooh, ice.
Ice.
Petrol in my veins.
Okay. So if it's ice, then petrol or diesel?
Diesel.
Diesel. Wow. Okay. What was your first car?
My first car was a very sexy 1984, actually February 85, Honda Ballard 130.
My dad had the car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maori biscuit beige with the pop-up headlights.
The exact same one.
Okay. I think my wife said she drove that car at one point.
Great car.
Great car,
still,
yeah.
Still many of them on the road, actually.
Yeah. What's your current car, not the one you're driving today?
So, when you work for an OEM or an importer, you change cars regularly. So I never get to 10,000 kilometers in a car. I have been driving that car for... I took the keys temporarily for 2 days, and I haven't given them back for about 6 weeks. But a Sorento, generally, or a Sportage. And in December, it'll be a Sedona for the trip down to the beach.
Nice. Okay.
No Stinger.
I drove four different Stingers over the course of a year. But sadly, we brought in only a limited number. We've sold them all. We had four press demos, and those have all been sold as well.
So
well, I suppose the big question for you as an OEM or importer is sell it or drive it. I suppose it's always the former, eh?
Sell it. Everything is always for sale.
Exactly.
That's the motto.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So, as I said, great to have you here, Gary. And thanks for answering those questions. I'm sure that they weren't too tough to navigate. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you reach the point of being CEO of Kia Motors? And what is the backstory?
Well, I think, if I go back to my childhood, I've always loved cars. So... what this industry is, it's very much about cars and it's very much about people. And, people's the other thing that really gets me up in the morning. But, tracking back, I wouldn't have said to you as a matric in 1992 that the motor industry is where I'm going to end up. It's just something I'm passionate about. I scrapbook. I like crashing go-karts. I like doing this and doing that.
It's funny how most of us in the industry have almost got you by mistake.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that's about the stigma of the motor industry.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily seen as this aspirational thing.
Like you're not 16 and, say, I want to go work in a car company.
No, I want to buy a car, but I don't want to work for a car company necessarily. But I think, what then happened is after varsity, I went and, you know, I'm a CA, I did my articles at Deloitte, and I had a couple of motor retail clients, and I thought, interesting business, lots of challenges, very different to what I'd assumed it was going to be, and then forgot about that. And one day I got a call, I was still at Deloitte, and won't you come for an interview? And it was kind of, why not?
Yeah, and just out of the blue.
I tripped into the AMH business as the financial manager of Kia in 2002 and never left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's an interesting journey. And, you know, so I suppose that, you know, I'm, I don't know if you've ever read the book Good to Great by Jim Collins and Built to Last. You know, so I don't know if you've read that, Wandy.
I'm going to lie and say yes.
You're going to lie and say yes.
Yeah.
Many of those Built to Last haven't lasted.
Not true. Oh, no, you're right. Eh? You're absolutely right. Yeah. I'm going to give you that book.
Please. Yeah.
I'm going to give you both of them.
Okay.
I think I've got a spare one on my bookshelf. I'm going to bring it for you. It should be mandatory reading. So. Although you're right, some of those Built to Last haven't lasted. But, you know, a lot of what Jim Collins believes in those books, if you've read it, is that the best kinds of leaders. I'm not saying that the other type isn't good, but a lot of the analysis they did for those books showed that the leaders that grew up in the company had the companies that were the most successful.
Well, it's the passion, right? You kind of learn to love something, and the longer you're there, the more that's like part
in
of
your blood.
Yeah.
I think that's the story in our business of the people that hired us, you know, the generation that came in with us, with myself. We were all sort of in our mid-20s, very naive and young, but lots of energy and ambition. And we were hired by guys like Bill Lynch and Manny DeCagna and Ray Levine, who we thought were these really old and seasoned guys who were in their mid-40s, actually.
Yes, yeah.
40s, maybe early 50s in Bill's case. And they brought us through. Very, very interesting. And I think they saw the value of that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we've got a whole bunch of people in our group who are in their mid-40s, who've been 20 years in the motor industry.
Wow.
Yeah. And 20 years in the same group, actually.
You make me not feel bad. I've been with Auto Trader, you know, 16, you know, 17 years. I just don't see the end of this automotive industry, to be honest. I just don't.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So to put it in perspective, Kia is one of South Africa's most searched brands according to our platform. I don't know if you knew that.
Not surprising.
Yeah, not surprising. So Kia is one of the most searched brands. In fact, it's got incredible figures. Kia, you know, searches for Kia on Autotrader have grown 52% year on year.
Wow.
Your perspective. I mean, are you seeing that in the sales? Why do you think that is?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One, you know, traditionally and certainly until very, very recently, We've been very strong in the entry segment, so your AB segment, your Picanto and Rio. I think people are shopping for value. They've had to become practical about their motor and budgets.
Definitely.
And, you know, I think what we bring is we are relevant in that space, but we also bring incredible quality, long warranties, generous service plans. And without, you know, being an ugly duckling, I think our styling is fantastic. Nobody wants to be seen in an ugly car if they can choose not to be. And, and those are good looking
cars.
Well,
the Sportage has got a lot better looking.
I'm biased, I'll say it. My first car at Kia was the Generation 1 Sportage.
Oh, really?
I was very, very proud of that car.
It was a bit boxy for me in the beginning. Now it's got
it was
like
utilitarian.
Yes. My one uncle drove one, and he loved that car. He swore by that car.
I have a few friends with a Rio, and I mean, even from an entry level vehicle, the value that you get out of it, I think, is why people kind of love it so much. It's such an easy car to drive as well. Simple.
And I think we speak about styling, but that previous generation Rio has aged really, really well.
Yeah.
I think it still looks fresh, modern, funky.
I heard there's a new one coming soon.
Facelift.
Okay.
In fact, I got my ticket today. We're flying down to Cape Town next week to do the press launch.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely.
Yeah. Oh, it's so
awesome.
Your
awesome
sources
stuff.
Are good.
Yeah, I know.
So, we know. We know somebody.
I know a few people.
We know somebody. So, you know, just to kind of put some of those other stats out there, our car advert views have grown by 82% on Kia's year-on-year. That's almost a doubling, if you think about 82%. The number of Kia dealerships have grown by 12%. Is that right?
No, that's actually not correct.
It's a bigger number.
Maybe the number of listed dealers has grown, but actually, funny enough.
Well, we've grown customers, I suppose.
There we go. Interesting point there. We peaked at 80 dealers about 3 years ago. And, you know, with the market decline, that was not the right way to do it. What you want to do is you want a viable, strong network that covers the relevant geographies.
Yeah.
We're at 68, and I think that's probably
where it is
now, the right number. Yeah.
Okay. It's a good sizable chunk of dealership.
Oh, it is.
And the Kia brand is searched more than a lot of other very popular brands in the past. For some reason, the Kia has become really, really popular this year. And and maybe it's the sleek styling and people have.
All I'm hearing is dealers' targets are going to go up after this conversation.
There we go.
In trouble.
You should send this link on to those 68. And the most popular model is the Kia Rio, which is takes up to 20% of all Kia searches.
Yeah, I mean, not particularly surprising, but very, very encouraging. I mean, I think, you know, people have spoken about the Rio and said, is that engine still relevant? Is that keeping up with trends? But I think we're very, very sensitized to what customers really want and where the value proposition needs to lie.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rio has to be relevant because the B segment is where the volume is.
Yeah. Mm.
You only have to look at the top 10, Polo and Polo Vivo. We have to be a consideration for a buyer in that segment. And Rio continues to be that.
So, I mean, incredible numbers. So, I mean, how did Kia arrive in South Africa?
Very interesting story, and I'm not going to I'm going to paraphrase it a bit, and I'll romanticize it perhaps a little bit. So really what was happening is you had Manny DiCanio's view of or he saw a trend of importership becoming an opportunity, and I think through the Imperial Group was seeking distribution of Kia in South Africa.
Sorry to cut across you there, Gary, but why was that? I mean, is it a case that we just weren't opening, OEMs weren't opening manufacturing plants here fast enough, weren't interested?
I think it's two things. I understand I was still in university at that stage.
Yeah. But,
one is that it was opening. The world was opening up to us. So those factories would have been open to the opportunity.
Yeah.
The second thing is that we were reducing the tariff protection.
Okay.
So duties were at 40% back in those days, which is actually still low in terms of what many other countries are doing.
Well, now it's at 18, right?
25%.
25.
25 is the standard. 18, okay. 18 if you Euro.
Okay.
And zero if you're Euro under 1,000 cc's.
Yeah. Okay.
So he saw that.
So is an electric car under 1,000 cc's?
I wonder if
that's a loophole.
Maybe that's the
end.
We found it. There you go. We've solved the industry problems. Ray Levine was doing the same thing.
Okay.
And Asia Motors was a trading house for Kia. Uh-huh. And this parallel race to distribution was happening.
When was this happening? This
was 95, 96, 97. And ultimately, the two came together as a force. So Bill mandated Manny. Manny hired Ray as the founding CEO of Kia, and the distribution agreement was signed under the Imperial banner in late 97, and we started trading in 98 with some very challenging looking product, but with some entrepreneurs who had a vision and saw an opportunity.
Yeah.
It's an incredible story, really.
Wow. And I mean, it just, since you've been there, like, as you say, 20 years, what are some of the milestones or achievements that you're most proud of?
I mean, I think we were a little bit rough and ready in the early days, and you kind of build infrastructure and you build sophistication as you go along. I mean, we were running our distribution business off a dealer system, off green screen dealer systems. We were faxing orders around and recapturing stuff. I mean, it was very, very unsophisticated.
Do you remember the fax?
So I have heard of a fax machine. I have never used one.
Wendy's about 18 in the shade.
Right.
19.
our kids laugh at the concept of effects. It's a foreign concept.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we modernized systems.
Yes.
I think that was certainly something that was an opportunity. As we grew bigger, as you industrialize, you have to do that. I think we built the whole value chain. So, you know, bond stores, running the distributorships, owning your dealerships, building marketing engines, all of those things, building the financial services empire. I mean, I think until, you know, our brand and a couple of others in the stable, in the old AMH and our motors stable came along, prepaid service plans on an entry-level car was unheard of. I mean, BMW was doing this, but nobody else really.
Yeah.
And we brought that value proposition. I think that was incredibly disruptive.
Just based on what consumers wanted, or was it just a like a global
strategy?
I think
it's a couple of things. One, it's about, you know, consumer doesn't know this brand yet, doesn't necessarily trust this brand, but you're always going to have that adoption curve where people are prepared to try. How do you tip that into volume? You create some sense of security. Yeah. So you back it with, at that stage, Imperial would have been a stronger brand than Kia. So you use that brand to leverage and you back it with your financial services. So you say your price includes a warranty, it includes a service plan, you've got motoring peace of mind. So you may not trust the car, but trust us. If something goes wrong, we'll back you. And of course, the Kia brand is now is a strong automotive brand, continues to be backed by a very strong industrial in South Africa. So I think we've got both. We've got both now. But that was necessary back then. I think it would have been very difficult if we were a no-name brand auto group backing a no-name brand.
Brand, yeah.
It would have been tough.
Yeah, that would, because you wouldn't have had the know-how or the foresight. So,
muscle, all of that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So Kia's an importer, and I want to kind of bust some of those myths if possible. A couple of lead-in questions. Tell us about, where Kia is built. Number one, and how it ends up in South Africa.
So if you'd asked people even 5 years ago, they would probably have said Japan or China.
Uh-huh.
And probably China, actually. Both of those are wrong. So Kia is a Korean brand.
Korea, yeah.
But most of the production, and this has been true for about 5 years, I like to tell this story, most of the production is outside of Korea. This is a global brand that has its origins in Korea. Its cultural origins and its corporate culture is very much Korean. But, for example, in South Africa, we're sourcing the Sportage from Slovakia.
Mm-hmm.
We've got another mystery product we hope to launch next year also from Slovakia. We source our Picanto, Rio, Sedona, Sorento, KT700 from Korea. And then our new hit, the Seltos, is from our latest factory, a very high-tech factory in India. And our next small crossover will also be from India. I mean, I don't think the South African consumer appreciates that most, the country of origin for most imports across brands, and this is including the OEM brands, is India. India is a powerhouse.
Well, I mean, you look at Tesla, they're putting up gigafactories everywhere.
Yeah.
And does it make, just, if a Tesla is manufactured in China, does it make it a Chinese bad car?
Well, your Apple iPhone's American, right? But is it not built in America?
Exactly. So I think that imported cars get a bad rap for for bad reasons. And that's exactly the point. It's not necessarily that it's a badly manufactured car.
Well, I think the OEMs have a standard, right? They have a standard across. Like, this is the quality that we expect across the range. Yes. It doesn't matter where you're from, doesn't matter where you are in the world. The Kia I drive in China must be the same I drive in South Africa. So I think a lot of consumers...
I mean, cars are spec'd differently for different countries, I'm assuming.
Specking is
different.
What you can't do is go and divide your R&D spend multiple times. It never makes sense. You're always looking to consolidate. The India story is partly about the fact that, we're one of very few right-hand drive markets in the world, right? And India is another one.
Yeah. So it makes sense to manufacture cars there.
It does make sense.
Well, it makes sense to manufacture cars,
I think the other thing is, we talk about importers and OEMs. So the thinking is that the OEMs manufacture all of the cars they sell in South Africa. That's not true.
No.
I mean, two-thirds of the cars sold in South Africa are actually imported.
Well, not all the BMWs that are on our roads are manufactured, yeah?
Yeah,
that's exactly what you're saying.
Most are not. And I think the story in the industry is that, it's almost a third. A third of the cars sold here are locally manufactured. A third are imported by OEMs, and a third are imported by importers. Our real story in manufacturing is an export story, and that's exactly what it should be. It's about earning foreign currency.
Yes.
It's about industrializing for export, balance of trade, all of those good things. And you just need that to be supported by a level of local consumption.
Yeah.
But I think in South Africa, we're solving for affordability, and we need to be, small cars are always going to be relevant.
Yeah.
And it's usually going to be cheaper to build those in scale offshore.
Yeah.
And so the South African industry should be focused on its major export market, which is currently Europe, and the cars that are relevant for building for Europe. And I think that's why we see this dynamic developing. So the importers definitely have a role to play.
Definitely.
A proud role to play.
How long is the car on the ship for? How far in advance do you have to plan and buy?
So it's possible to transship. So for example, cars from India can come straight from India, or they can transship through Sri Lanka. European cars, not so much. They tend to come straight from a European port. Here, the Korean cars can come via Dubai. But you're looking at typically, you know, for all three of those, 4 to 6 weeks.
So if I had to go to a Kia dealership and say, I want this particular Sportage in this particular color, and there aren't any.
Yes.
I'm looking at, 2 months max?
Yeah, I mean, the chances of there not being any, I mean, even in this COVID situation of supply and demand shock, is quite low.
Okay.
We are not a make to order brand. We're not we're not a premium brand who you can spec your car to death. We make to stock and then we supply from stock. So because we have that whole value chain, we are the importer and the distributor. We have the bond yards and we own the dealers, or a large percentage of the dealers. We tend to keep about 120 days of stock between dealer and importer on rubber in South Africa. Another 30 days on the water. And another 30 days going into production. So that pipeline's quite stable.
Yeah.
And the mix, you know, we don't have thousands and thousands of variants and thousands of colors either. I mean, we probably still do have too many, and everybody really has too many.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that burnt orange that you didn't supply and you lost a sale to a competitor. So you always have one in the country.
Just in case.
Yeah. So, I don't want to be in a situation where we can't supply. And I think that is definitely part of our strategy, is high availability. We want the customer, if they're in certainly Gauteng, Western Cape, KZN, we want a car on a dealer floor. It might not be the dealer floor you walk onto.
But it's somewhere.
The one up the road, we can source, we can do an interbranch transfer, and we can deliver your car that day or the next day.
So I mean, that's quite a big investment in stock. You know, if you're sitting on 120 days worth of stock, that's a serious investment in the country. You know, and I think people don't realize that it's not a build to order scenario. It's not like you know, these guys are keeping half a year's worth of stock.
But that just speaks to the demand, right? It just means that you are moving it as quick as
there's predictable demand. Yeah. You know. Exactly right. There is a science. It's a little bit of art at the front end, but a lot of science.
You bring the pretty cars in.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, shifting to, you know, this definition of OEM, importer, manufacturer, assembler. Mm. I mean, I've always said, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because you're probably more, more qualified to correct this than most others. And that is, my definition is that every single brand in South Africa is an OEM.
Absolutely.
They're all original equipment manufacturers.
100% right.
It's just the location of the manufacturer that changes.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite
correct. That's all that the difference is. So kind of this label of importer, is it that bad? I mean, to your point earlier on, the two-thirds of locally manufactured cars are actually imported.
Yes.
So it's an OEM. It's just an imported variant of that OEM's car.
Well, it's a product-to-market strategy.
Yes.
Everyone has a hybrid strategy. We'll import some. I mean, it just happens that right now, in our case, 100% is imported.
Yes.
Now, the conditions could arise where we could assemble.
Yeah. Mm. I hope you do.
Knockdown or full assembly. That could happen.
What is the definition of knockdown for our listeners?
So knockdown is where, you know, there's two types. So one is I build a car overseas completely. This is going to sound strange. I then take a completed car out of the factory. I disassemble it into pieces. That's called disassembly knockdown. I ship the pieces and then I put them back together on the other side.
Okay.
That is strange.
And you would do that because it's duty efficient.
Okay.
Importing parts versus a complete car is duty efficient.
And then, in terms of the cost?
In terms of the cost.
Okay.
And you offset that against the labor of breaking it apart and putting it back together. And it tends to break square or maybe create a small advantage. That's what we call semi-knockdown. Complete knockdown is where the parts are shipped from the component manufacturers directly to you, and then you build it up. But you tend to then have a paint shop as well. And
In the first example, the car's already painted.
Yeah, you've got a car that's ready for sale, and you break it into pieces and you put it back together.
Okay.
The complete knockdown's virtually a full assembly environment.
And is it already you know, pressed panels?
Oh, yes.
Yes, okay. Oh, yes. Okay, yes. So it's really just going a little bit backward into the manufacture process.
Correct. So, so you know, the line there to full manufacture is, you know, paint shops and press shops are massive, massive investments.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of investments you need to make 5-10 years in advance. You need to be looking at a product you haven't started even designing yet, never mind building.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like an oil tanker. It doesn't turn on a ticky. It's a long-term pull.
So I suppose, you know, if you really sit back and think about it, you know, besides the benefits to the economy of local manufacture, and the tax benefits, every single car in South Africa is imported because the parts are imported.
So
they're not the design doesn't happen in South Africa.
Yeah. Design and R&D are not happening in South Africa. I mean, I think that's, you know, to some extent, if that could happen, that would be great, you know, to broaden our skills base and our contribution as an auto sector, yes, not just to be about assembly. I think the South African story is about component supply. So you're quite right. A large percentage of the components are imported. And the drive is to change the mix of local content that's being supplied into manufacture. Why? Because it helps us industrialize.
Yes.
And that's where the real job soak is. You know, if you go into a modern factory, it looks like a laboratory, and you sometimes struggle to find people. Machines are assembling because they just do it to that millimeter perfection, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's the difference between manufacture and then assembly.
100%. Yeah. When you go down one layer to assembly or to component supply, that's where the real opportunity is.
Because there's jobs.
Because there's jobs.
Yeah. Okay, so I mean, I suppose I kind of like went down that road, Wandy, to you know, try and potentially bust another myth, and that is parts availability. Have you ever thought that imported cars have a lack of parts? Because I've heard that by friends, consumers, family. Cars imported, so you're going to battle to get parts.
I've never experienced it myself or heard somebody say that necessarily, but I think it is kind of the common thought process when you think about the fact that it's not built here, therefore it's not being made here, therefore there's no kind of supply for it, so I can understand why people would think that way. But I mean, from a personal experience, I had to just get a tail light recently, and
he crashed his car last week.
So it was a fairly easy process of kind of getting that part.
Yeah.
I think you just have to know where to look. It's the misconception is not necessarily true.
Is it true, Gary?
I think the reality is this, is that we are spoiled for choice as consumers.
Yeah.
And if consumers are having a poor after sales experience, they will gravitate away from a brand.
Exactly.
And if you go back over the last 20 years, there are brands that have come in and that have left. And I think that showed that either they weren't sophisticated or reliable enough, it's a quality issue, or the business behind it wasn't able to support the motoring experience. So the fact that we're a 22-year brand, and there are a number of others that are like that, confirms that I think that's not the reality.
Not the reality,
So, you know, when you are building components, your rear tail light, you're building for two reasons. One, you're building for assembly. You're sending to the factory to build the next new car. And two, it's for replacement for your bus tail light. Unfortunately, the factory always gets first price.
Yes.
So it's about your parts strategy. So our strategy as an importer, again, we're very clever about how we do this efficiently in terms of, you know, the business. So we're not wasteful in terms of sitting on a lot of stock. I think we're very efficient. But we absolutely obsessed with supply rate. And supply rate is customer in Cape Town needs a part. First prize is I have it on the shelf in the dealership in Somerset West.
Yeah.
Second is that I have it in the hub down the road in Stikland. Third prize is my overnight from Johannesburg is going to supply me. And, you know, the first one is almost 100%. The second one is 99%. And the third one is 95%. So the chances of you not getting a part, it's almost a redundant question.
Yeah.
Yes.
What we do on top of that as an importer is under our warranty program, and I think we have the best warranty program in the country, 5 years, unlimited kilometers, is that if your car's in for a warranty repair, which it hardly ever will be because the things don't break, but if it is, and that car has to sleep because of a parts supply, we give you a rental car. We give you a car.
Okay.
And I think we're respectful of the of two things. One is that people don't really have great public transport alternatives. So if the car's off the road, it's, you know, it's a real problem, inconvenience.
Yeah. And
secondly, you know, commercial vehicles. So if this is being used, I'm a rep, or it's my K2700 Bucky and I'm a garden service or an electrician or a plumber or whatever it is.
You're now losing business.
My business is off the road. Mm. So we've got to help you out. And so I think we give that peace of mind as a default. That's not a negotiation. That's built into the offering.
Well, I suppose, I mean, that kind of answers the question. I mean, in today's globalized world, parts shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
You know, if it's, I'll give you an example. I used to drive a, Gary's going to probably cringe now.
I'm listening on the
I used to drive a Jeep SRT.
Right.
And, it was only for the V8. I used to drive a Jeep SRT and I had a bumper bashing with it. And I had to get a replacement part inside the next to the radiator. There was one or two parts that had to be replaced. And it was beginning of lockdown, I think. And my car got locked down in the dealership.
Right.
Mm. So lockdown happened.
And your car was locked down?
And the car was there.
Yeah.
It stayed there
right.
until lockdown was lifted. I don't know if I told you this.
No, this is the first time I'm hearing this.
So it stayed there until lockdown was lifted. But they still managed to get the part.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, they still managed to get the part when lockdown lifted very quickly. And so I've never experienced that.
I think it depends also on the size of the brand. Has a huge impact You know, I think I remember one of my, I guess my mother's friend was a neighbor of ours, had, I think it was a Dodge. This is a few years back, and just because they just essentially became a little bit more popular in South Africa, and they had an accident, and it was a little bit more difficult for them to get a part, just simply because they weren't as big.
Can I give a consumer tip on that type of experience? So, you have to just think about the whole value chain. Often, the issue may be that the panel shop where your car is there to be repaired is bottlenecked. They've either got too many cars in the shop or there's some kind of other issue. And my tip there would be approach your nearest dealership. If your car is supposedly off the road because they're waiting for a part, speak to your nearest dealership.
Yeah.
You know, in the digital world, the access to that kind of information is quick and fairly transparent. Yeah. It should be, and really should be. It doesn't matter what brand it is.
Well, I guess, the brand or the OEM doesn't have an ownership stake in the panel shop in most instances.
We don't necessarily have an automatic line of sight.
Exactly.
So if your car is insured, we work very closely with the insurers because you can imagine the cost of repair is not just about the actual repair.
Yeah.
I'm usually putting the person in a rental car as an insurer. So the time to repair is absolutely critical. Probably more important often than the actual cost of repair. So we're measuring these things in hours. So you watch that very closely with insurers because every day counts.
Yeah, literally. Counts. Yeah. If you put yourself in the shoes of the person who's waiting for that, to your point, literally one day could be the difference of a lifetime. So I can completely understand that. Yeah.
This is where people fall out of love with brands.
Exactly.
Is in the ownership experience. So I think we're very mindful of that.
So, we spoke about the success of Kia and very briefly, how has lockdown been to Kia? I mean, I know we spoke about the numbers and you've been flying. What has lockdown been like for Kia?
I mean, I think they say never waste a crisis, right? And I think it was certainly a period of reflection and, you know, what does the new world look like? What's it going to look like? Are we fit to trade in this new world? How do we navigate through this? You know, apart from all of the financial sort of business considerations, I think it has been a time of reinvention. I think we've been able to look very closely at the customer to try and anticipate where they're going to go, where the trends are going to take us. We've had time when we're not so operationally busy to just sit back and look at the business and say, what can we improve? While we're quiet, while we now have time, what do we do? And honestly, it was the busiest 6 months of my working career.
Yeah.
Wow.
Of course, you're sitting in pajamas or in shorts or in whatever at home, but your brain is working all the time.
Yeah.
Your phone is working all the time. You're running out of battery by lunchtime because you're literally connecting with other people's brains and just creating ideas and testing them.
As a result of the lockdown, was there anything that really stood out in terms of a change in consumer behavior maybe, or something that you identified that the business needs to kind of change?
I mean, I think where we were going before lockdown, we as a brand, we're moving the middle of our brand is moving from probably Rio into something more like a Seltos. And the Picanto and Rio will always be relevant in this market. But I think our middle is moving and we're on that crossover train like many of our competitors are. And I think we're a very strong player in that space. So one of our thoughts was, is that still going to be relevant when we come out of lockdown?
Yeah.
And I think we found it to be true. I think in a sense, it's even accelerated for us as a brand because people looking to buy down are either going to say, I'm in my brand, I love my brand, and I'm going to look for a used version of the car I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I can't afford a new car, or I'm going to have to find something that ticks the same boxes for me. And you know, when we get people into our car, it's actually quite easy
for them to just
for them to sort of come around to actually this was not a consideration, but now it is. So I think that was one of the things for us is how do we start talking to people we weren't necessarily talking to 6 months ago. Is that a purely sort of digital banner thing? That's certainly part of the recipe. Is it an experiential thing? How do we get bums in seats? How do we get people into those conversations? How do we do those kinds of things? And I think we're on a journey with that. I don't think we've finished, but we did identify that and we are exploiting it.
So what does the care of the future look like, Gary? 2 to 3 years from now, without giving any of your strategic secrets away, because I'm pretty sure that, besides the consumer, the industry is going to be watching this. So, what is the key of 2 to 3 years time?
Well, of course, it's flattering when the industry is watching and they're watching their back and we're considered a real competitor. I mean, we are a top 10 brand. I think the journey just briefly, when the market was really strong, I mean, we were really on a charge with previous generation Picanto, Rio and Sportage. And our issue there was, can we get enough out of the factory to supply this demand? And the answer was we couldn't. And, since then, as you say, the brand has continued to evolve, the quality, the styling, all of that kind of thing. Where we are now is that when you look at the global brand, and I did say it's a global brand, we are transforming. In January, coming January, we'll hear the full details of the new global plan.
Is this the rumors that are going around?
So the rumors are not untrue.
Okay.
The brand will be relaunched.
Okay.
There'll be a new logo.
Oh, wow.
I might be able to show you guys and your team, but I won't be able to distribute it, unfortunately. But
of course,
early next year, it's going to be relaunched.
When was the word?
And repositioned. So there's very clearly a...
Globally, not just locally.
Globally.
Okay.
So there will continue to be an ICE approach because ICE is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
The thrust is going to be towards the EV space. And everything we've heard about shared mobility, autonomous, connected from every brand, Kia's sort of asking itself the question, where do we play in that space? Where's our advantage? How do we become a leader? The aspiration is to be a top 3 EV brand globally. With Hyundai, so Hyundai, Kia collectively, shared R&D. Everything else is not shared, but the R&D is shared. And there's a new model being launched to express that aspiration. So that model, we're trying to price it for South Africa, actually.
Under 500,000. I don't know.
Is okay.
Mum's the word. Mum's the word. We're not going to push Gary for that.
So I think that's very exciting.
Yeah.
Where does South Africa sit? It's going to be an intelligent approach to market. So where you don't, what you don't do is go off with this grand vision and leave 70% of your markets behind.
Yes.
But I think
kind of evolve
as South Africa starts to move towards that space, we will, because our biggest export customer, Europe, is moving there very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And as your survey has shown, George, as the Auto Trader has shown, the consumer's ready. Now it's really solving for price. Infrastructure's coming up very quickly. There's a lot of investment going on in that space. I think it's going to be a very dynamic space, and I think Kia is very, very well placed to exploit that.
Is a coincidence though, because I've seen it's not just Kia that's doing some sort of like rebrand or restructuring. BMW did the same, Nissan. Is this all because of EVs, or is there something else that's happening in terms of
driving? I can't speak for those brands, but I think, you know, that's what happens. Brands evolve over time, and when you are looking to move very clearly and definitely in a position, you've got to take people with you.
Yeah.
Whether that's the people who work for you, your business partners, your consumers, you've got to show them. It's got to be a visual thing. It's got to be an emotive thing.
Yeah.
And if you don't change the look of your brand, you know, what you don't do is you don't walk away from what's made your brand successful.
Yes. Of course.
You know, the quality, the essence, the styling, the design in South Africa, our infrastructure, the way we go to market, that solidity. And the fun feeling in advertising and a very South African feel. You know, we don't use foreign advertising because we're owned by South Africans, we're run by South Africans, we are a South African company, we're trying to solve South African problems.
Mm.
So that feel doesn't go away. That doesn't go away. But it's how do we express what the global brand's going to be doing in a very, very South African way. And that's what gets us out of bed in the morning.
Love it. Can't wait to see. So very finally, Gary, and it's been fascinating, but how important is the used car market to Kia? I mean, you've got this
Kia Confidence
campaign or category of car
that
you have on the roads. Tell us a bit about Kia Confidence and how important used cars are.
Okay, I'll tell you about Kia Confidence and also a little bit about Kia Club, which has just been launched. So Kia Confidence is our certified pre-owned brand. And what we realized actually, you know, about 2 years ago is that most people buying Kias today are actually buying, you know, because the brand has moved so fast, they're buying a generation behind where the brand is actually. You know, that's where they are. That generation was great, and the next one is even greater. So there's almost a lag in perception of where the brand is.
Mm.
So how do we bring them forward? One is you've got to give them a brand experience. So give them a reason to come to our dealerships where the brand manifests itself and get them to experience the look and the feel and the vibe and the assurance of, you know, our service plans, maintenance plans, warranties, all of that kind of thing. Let's start a conversation with them. Understanding that most people who are buying a Kia today, tomorrow, the volume of it is in used cars because that's where the park is. I mean, that just speaks for itself mathematically. And once we've got them falling in love with us as a brand and a business, the chances of them buying a new car or buying the next used
much
Kia
higher.
Are very, very good.
Mm.
The second thing, of course, is just you've got to be in charge, I think, of you've got to offer the customer, if you want to build value in your brand, you've got to be able to offer the customer the best possible version of your product. And so when you come to Kia Confidence, we're backing it. We're doing all of the roadworthy checks and the 125 points, et cetera, because we want to set you up for a great experience.
You've put your stamp of approval on that used car.
Absolutely stamp of approval. If the only way you get to a used Kia is, you know, maybe a less desirable channel, then we have no influence over your perception of Kia. So,
yeah.
So it's taking
no control.
Taking control of that. And then what Kia Club is our owner's club. And this is not about how we sell the next new car. This is about understanding that there are 200,000 people driving Kias, 100,000 of them are under warranty, 100,000 of them are not. And that second 100,000 probably have never been to a Kia dealership. How do we bring them into the fold? How do we communicate with them? How do we add value to their mobility and ownership experience?
Mm. Well, I mean,
you
want them to be into the next great Kia.
Yes.
Yeah,
and again, like we want to give them a used car option that is of high quality and high assurance, we want to do the same on the parts and servicing.
So, yeah.
You know, the perception, it's very expensive to service at a franchise dealer. I'm going to get ripped off.
That is the perception, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to have to pay that premium. I can understand the assurance, but I don't want to pay the premium. We want to bust that myth. We want to create mechanisms for those owners that add value for them, where they're happy to come into a dealership again and again and again.
I agree. I mean, my third car in my lifetime. You know, we're not going to talk about that brand yet because we're talking about Kia today. So bust that myth for me.
Yeah.
I always thought the same thing. I thought that franchise dealers, I mean, I was young. I was you know, 22, yeah. 23. And I thought that taking the car to a franchise dealer to have a service or a repair is expensive. And my third car, sadly, wasn't a Kia.
Don't worry, your next car will be a Kia.
You weren't in the country yet, so you got away with that one. And I was surprised. I was absolutely surprised at the cost of the services at the franchise dealer.
I mean, ask you some research because I definitely have that perception. So from experience, actually, but also I've never actually dug into if that's the case throughout, for like a full service, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully we bust these myths.
I think, you know, I think you've got to set, you can't wish for it to happen. You've got to set yourself up for it.
So, yeah.
You know, the way we price typically as an industry is that's the price, take it or leave it. And you know, that mindset has to change. Mm. I think is changing. And that we're measuring lost sales in after sales. We're bringing sort of a sales mindset to the after sales environment. You have to.
Yeah.
Are we fit for purpose for the consumer or are we not?
Yeah.
Why are we prepared to walk away from business? Why are we prepared to say to the customer, you're not worth our attention? It's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Especially South Africans.
Especially South Africans.
We don't... If you're not going to give us, we're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great that you guys are doing that. Amazing.
Well, gentlemen, we're out of time. That's been fascinating. CEO of Kia Motors South Africa, Gary Scott, joining us right here at Auto Traders Studio. Mm-hmm. And from Wandile Sishi, final thoughts?
Thank you for joining us. I think it's really interesting to finally get to understand how OEMs are thinking because I think the consumer sometimes thinks there's a little bit of a disconnect.
Yes.
So it's great to see that, you know, things are changing.
Final thoughts, Gary.
George, thanks very much for having me.
You're most welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been another Auto Central show. It's been brilliant.
Yes.
And we'll see you next time. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader.